Thank you very much. Thank you for this invitation, and also thank you very much for this first presentation. It was very interesting, and some elements of it were familiar. Thank you to the interpreters as well for enabling this webinar to happen. My name is Martin Pigeon. I am French and Belgian. I live in Brussels, where I am now, and I am the bioenergy campaigner of the forest NGO Fern in Brussels. And Fern is an NGO that defends forests and the rights of the people who depend on them, because typically forests are inhabited. And I am very happy to have the opportunity to talk to you about what is happening in Europe this morning regarding the biomass sector, because very unfortunately, it seems that Europe was a sort of a first mover in that sector. And if you can move to the next slide, please. Thank you. The story of bioenergy in Europe is very much a story of growth, of tremendous growth. Since 2003, then in 2009, the EU has created massive market incentives for energy operators to use woody biomass. I'm providing you the numbers here, the latest ones we have. 16 billion euros in direct subsidies in 2020, and about 12 billion euros in indirect aids. And that represents, for example, what energy operators burning biomass do not have to buy on the carbon market, because the CO2 emissions of woody biomass that are absolutely considerable are considered zero in the energy sector. Yeah, they are counted in the land use sector. And I will get back to this. This is very important because the situation of the woody biomass sector back in 2003 in Europe was, it was an old industry and it was a small industry. The vast majority of the wood being burned for energy was being burned by households in a traditional way, the way it has been done for a very, very long time, actually. Humans have been burning wood for a very long time. This is new. This new policy has created a new market in the energy sector, and in particular, and I think that ties very much with what Mrs. Katsubara has just said, it has created a new market for the conversion of coal power plants to biomass. It's either complete conversions or co-firing, as has been mentioned. And that is important because the volumes of wood involved by this practice are absolutely enormous. Just to take a famous example, because it's the largest one in Europe, the Drax power plant in the UK, the one power plant is burning more wood than the whole country produces every year. Of course, it is not possible to source this domestically, so all of it is imported from Northern America mainly. Wood burning today still represents the largest source of so-called renewable energy in Europe, about 40%. And there is a direct consequence of this policy, and that is very clear in the proportion of the wood harvest that is used for energy. In the early 2003, the estimates are like about 41% of the wood harvest in Europe was used for energy, was burned, either by households or by industries. This proportion has jumped to more than 50% today, and we are talking about really enormous volumes of wood. And you can see on the graph on the right-hand side, that's taken from the Financial Times and the consultancy Hawkins Wright, that the EU still today, but even more before, was the by large the very, very largest market for industrial wood pellets in this case. This has a very big consequence on forests themselves, because traditionally wood pellets were made out of sawdust. They were made out of residues of wood processing. And actually, we are fine with that. We don't see that as a problem necessarily. The problem is that this enormous growth has created an incentive to source wood from anywhere. And so now the industry is no longer only using sawdust, it is using whole trees. Next slide, please. Thank you. And those are some images from Germany, Estonia, from the yards of wood pellets plants. On the right-hand side, you see that this is a truck coming into a factory of the US company Enviva. And I'm quoting a whistleblower from this company, who says extremely clear things. The company says that we use mostly waste like branches, tree tops, and debris to make pellets. What a joke! We use 100% whole trees in our pellets. We hardly use any waste. Pellet density is critical. You get that from whole trees, not junk. We take giant whole trees. We don't care where they come from. The notion of sustainably managed forests is nonsense. We can't get wood into the mills fast enough. I took a bit of time to quote this in length because it shows very well what we are dealing with. The biggest problem, I would argue, of the biomass incentives that we have in Europe is that they have given a market value to all the trees, including those that didn't have an economic value before, because they were, the wrong species, the wrong age, the wrong size. But typically, many of these trees had a crucial importance for biodiversity. So what we see now is that forests are being degraded very fast because of that. Next slide, please. So I will go fast on this one because this has already been mentioned. But the climate impact of burning wood can be extremely different depending on what kind of wood you burn. If you only use residues like sawdust to produce, electricity, for example, instead of coal, that is the situation that is described by the graph on the top right. You see that you start having a climate benefit that is a gain compared to the continued use of coal after just a few years. So, of course, you would get an even faster climate gain by substituting coal by like really low carbon sources like wind or solar energy. But even in this case, it's not too bad. But if, and that is the case, unfortunately, of what's happening in Europe, and I think a lot of what is happening in Japan as well. By the way, this is taken from a public calculator produced by the Administration of Canada, and it is very clear. If you use whole trees for export to be used in electricity production instead of using coal, which I think is typically the case of, for example, wood pellets imported to Japan from Canada, then the climate debt is at least 90 years, almost a century. And it's not even sure you ever start seeing a climate benefit, because After a century, and especially now that we are in a climate crisis, the regrowth of the forest is completely an assumption. We are not sure these forests are going to come back. And that, I think, is one of the main messages that I would like to convey to you this morning, I mean today, it's Monday morning here in Brussels, is that in the particular moment in time in which we are, given the acuteness of the climate crisis, we no longer have the time for the trees to grow back. It's just worsening, actually, the climate crisis, even compared to coal in many cases. Keep in mind that what I told you about the scenario of using whole trees to be burned instead of coal in fire plants, the 90 years carbon debt means that during 90 years, the result of burning trees is worse than burning coal. All this extraction, the next slide, please. Thank you. All this extraction of wood, of course, is having a big impact on forests, as I said. And you can see in the bottom right, the state of the different forest biomes in Europe, because you know Europe is quite diverse and we have different forest ecosystems. But as you can see, none of them are in a favorable conservation condition. At least not a majority. The best is in the Mediterranean regions. And the worst is probably in the boreal regions in the north, in Scandinavia. By extracting so much trees from forests, we are depleting these forests. And so we are also reducing their capacity to act as a carbon sink. And this is shown in the numbers now. You can see this is the graph on the left. This represents the EU carbon sink, and you can see that starting from 2009 and going up until today, there is a growing reduction of the sink. That means that forests are capturing CO2 less and less and less year after year. We have spectacular cases like Finland. Finland is the most forested country in Europe. Finland has lost its carbon sink. The land sector in Finland today emits more carbon than it captures, which is actually quite a feat to achieve for such a forested country. The graph on the top right is very important. It shows you the CO2 emissions from biomass combustion in the European Union since 1990. You can see that this shows you the growth story I was telling you about. And you can actually see that most of the growth comes from the policy. It comes from the use of wood for the production of electricity and heat in orange. Next slide, please. So this, I think, is the root of the problem. We have inherited from the UNFCCC a very costly accounting choice. I would call it a mistake, but it also has its own logic. The idea is that the CO2 emissions from biomass are not counted in the energy sector, but in the land use sector. So the problem is that, for example, if Vietnam exports wood to Japan to be burned there, Japanese energy operators don't have to pay or declare any CO2 emissions. Their emissions are considered as zero. They are counted as zero. But Vietnam has to withdraw this carbon from its own land use account. The problem is that the incentive for Japanese energy operators to get a zero carbon source of energy is much, much, much larger than for Vietnam to protect its land use. see, you have a very severe discrepancy between the incentive, the driver factor of the energy sector, and the incentive to, you know, protect forests. And we see that very, very well in Europe. The biomass industry has become a way for member states to pretend that they are reducing CO2 emissions. Whereas in reality, they are reducing much less because actually burning wood creates so much CO2. I will get the next slide, please. Thank you. It is not so much present yet in the debate, but it is starting to grow very much in Europe because we see an explosion, because more and more people are using wood stoves and wood boilers, because more and more local plants are burning wood. There is actually a worsening of air pollution because burning wood is very toxic. It's like tobacco, actually. And that also isn't factored in. Actually, EU citizens are paying billions of euros to see their forest cut and their air polluted because of that. Next slide, please. So this brings us to RED III. RED stands for the Renewable Energy Directive. We are coming here in Europe, we are coming just out of the revision of that directive. This was the legislation that created the market incentives in the first place. And so if you recall, the incentives are three. Those can be direct subsidies, those can be tax rebates, and those are the fact that energy operators don't have to buy any CO2 credits on the carbon markets in Europe. And the first instance of the RED was blind, actually, to the origin of the wood. It didn't have any criteria whatsoever in 2009. In 2018, a first series of sustainability criteria for forest biomass were introduced. You have to see that these so-called sustainability criteria actually identify the types of wood that energy operators must burn in order to get to benefit from the market incentives. But these sustainability criteria were absolutely insufficient, because primarily they were based on legality. If they come from a country that has legislation regulating forest logging, then it's considered sustainable. And of course, that is not the case. So that's the reason why in 2020, so only 2 years actually after this legislation was adopted, the European Commission proposed a revision of that legislation, because they were keenly aware that this legislation was insufficient. And so they proposed a revision of that legislation, which was an improvement. It was insufficient in our opinion, but it started insisting on two important directions. The first is the cascading principle. So the idea is that wood actually is a scarce and precious resource, and you want to keep it for economic uses that yield a lot of added value, the construction of furniture, the construction of buildings, material uses, specialty chemicals, or the whole bioeconomy agenda. Whereas I don't know if I told you that, but the biomass industry in Europe would not exist without public support. It is not profitable. It is not competitive against other energy sources without public subsidies, without public support. The second direction was to eliminate support to the production of electricity out of woody biomass because it's absolutely inefficient. I mean, it is indefensible, in fact, with to use so much wood for a process that at the very, very best has an efficiency rate of about 40%. But this was not sufficient in our opinion. You know, if you recall what I told you about the different climate impacts of different types of wood, our position is that these market incentives for woody biomass should absolutely be restricted to wood processing residues. In other words, you should never log a tree to burn it. You might burn the pieces of the trees that you need less, but the decision to log a tree must never be taken by the incentive to burn it. And we've been very lucky and successful, I must say, with the European Parliament, because they understood the situation, they understood the problem, and they, with a few exceptions, but which is exceptional, actually, as an environmental NGO, they very much adopted our position. They proposed, with a majority of 60%, which is not small, to exclude what we call primary woody biomass, which is more or less the definition of roundwood. They propose to exclude this type of wood, that is all the wood that is extracted from forest directly, from all the incentives regulated by the RED, including, and that is important, from the zero rating of biomass emissions. So under EU legislation, only the biomass feedstocks that meet the sustainability criteria can benefit from the market incentives, including the zero rating. The Parliament wanted to exclude all the woods taken directly from forest from these incentives. So this we were very, very happy about this. And in volume, that is the graph that is on the bottom right, that represents about half of the wood supply in Europe. So, you know, 20, 25 years ago, before all these incentives were created, the amount of wood used in the energy sector was about a third of what it is today. So reduced by half, that would not, you know, solve the whole problem, but that would have solved a lot of it. Next slide, please. Unfortunately, in the EU system, the Parliament is not the most powerful decision maker. The most powerful decision maker is member states. And you have to understand that this debate took place in a very particular context, the context of Russia's war on Ukraine. That triggered, you know, a huge increase of the costs of energy in Europe. And confronted with that situation, member states decided to actually double their ambition to develop a renewable energy, to get more, you know, autonomous from fossil fuel providers such as Russia, in particular for natural gas. And so they took extremely bold and ambitious decisions. They adopted a target that they want to grow renewable energy from about 22% of the complete renewable of the total energy mix today to 42.5% in 2030 in 7 years. So they want to add as much renewable energy generation capacity to the grid and to the system in 7 years that has been done since the beginning of renewable energy, which is enormous. And the problem of our demand, removing primary woody biomass from that, is that, you know, primary woody biomass represents about between 15 and 20%, actually, of the renewable energy mix that is on the market today. You know, I told you that wood represented 40% of renewable energy in Europe, and primary woody biomass is roughly half of that. And so it was not easy for us to argue and to convince them that at the very moment they wanted to double the amount of renewable energy, they had to start by removing 20% of what they were doing already. So that's the first context. The second element is that in the EU system, there is, so member states delegate their power to one country, which is the presidency of the council. That's how the system is organized. And this country is going to negotiate legislation on behalf of all the other member states. And in the case of the red, this country was Sweden. Sweden had the 6-month rotating presidency. And Sweden is a very particular country in Europe when it comes to forestry policy, because it's a very heavily forested country. They have a very powerful forestry industry, and they don't want EU legislation to touch that. And because the RED was a very, very complicated text, you have to see that it was not only dealing with forest biomass, but it's dealing with all forms of renewable energy. And as you know, there is a lot of nuclear generation, especially in my country, in France, for example. And so France absolutely wanted nuclear energy to count as renewable, and Germany wanted to replace gas with hydrogen and to get this considered renewable regardless of the source sometimes, et cetera, et cetera. And so it was a very complicated negotiation. And it was so complicated, actually, that all the member states could not give a clear negotiation mandate, that is to say, a list of priorities and red lines, things that are absolutely unacceptable, to Sweden. And so Sweden was negotiating on behalf of all member states with the parliament, with more or less an open menu. They knew what were, you know, the biggest positions and stuff, but what happened is that eventually they prioritized their own red lines, in fact, for forest biomass. They knew that they had there was a big number of countries that also didn't want the parliament's position, like the exclusion of primary woody biomass, but they really ignored everything. It's quite scandalous, actually. But anyway, that's the situation. That's how the system works. And that led us to the final outcome of the RED that we know now and that I'm going to describe to you. Next slide, please. So, bear with me, because this is a bit complicated and there will be a lot of details, but I will try to not spend too much time on this one. So the final outcome of the RED is much less ambitious than what the parliament had wished. Energy companies will keep enjoying public money for the burning of millions of trees, but it is still an improvement compared to the present situation. So, first of all, the cascading principle has been kept. Excuse me, I need to close something on my computer. So the cascading principle has been kept. That is to say, member states have to organize their support schemes, so their subsidy essentially, in a way that they only reward energy operators when those burn wood that couldn't be used for any other purpose, essentially. The idea is that it is important to reduce the distortion in the wood sector. I didn't mention it, but one of the victims of the biomass incentives in Europe are the other wood-using industry sectors, Even pulp and paper, for example, or wood panels or furniture, you know, these industries are profitable without subsidies, so they don't get subsidies, but they cannot compete with the biomass industry because the biomass industry receives subsidies for buying the wood. So the idea is to reduce this distortion. The idea is to really recognize that wood is a very precious resource and that you just shouldn't waste it by burning it, unless you don't have any other choice. Of course, it is only a principle. How you implement that now, that we will see. The principle, and that is important, the principle of ending the support to the production of electricity has been kept, but not entirely. So the power plants that are only producing electricity normally can no longer benefit from biomass incentives unless they are in special zones, in overseas territories, or use bioenergy with carbon capture and storage. But, you know, this is an assumption for now. This technology doesn't exist yet, but I will get back to this. Importantly, and that is actually what is left of the discussion around primary woody biomass, there won't be, energy operators will no longer get any subsidies for energy that they produce using saw logs, veneer logs. I mean, those typically are used, you know, in the construction and furniture sector. And normally, foresters would make much more money selling these to construction companies or to furniture companies than to biomass companies, because those are, you know, the precious parts of the wood. So, yeah, that won't change a lot, but in some countries it makes a difference. Industrial grade roundwood. Now that is interesting, because this is not defined in the legislation. Each member state in the EU will need to adopt its own definition of industrial grade roundwood. If you see, that is also a way to implement the cascading principle. The idea, again, is that wood that can be used for essentially material uses should not be burnt. And so energy operators should not be rewarded for burning it. And the last category of exclusion is stumps and roots. You know, the most destructive thing you can do to a forest is to remove the stumps and the roots of the trees. That destroys the soils. It's a catastrophe. It should absolutely never be done, unfortunately, because that was not excluded until now. Forestry companies tended to extract the stumps and the roots of the trees to crush them and make pellets out of them and sell them to biomass plants. Hopefully this will stop now. Something new as well under the new red, and I think it is quite meaningful, is that there is a very strong link now between the sustainability criteria and the land use targets. What does that mean? It means that biomass fuels, so the wood that is coming from a country that has lost its carbon sink, well, that wood can no longer meet the sustainability criteria. And that is very important because, of course, as we are speaking, and as I told you earlier, more and more EU countries are losing the carbon sink precisely because they have extracted too much wood out of their forest. And one of the main culprits for that was biomass, indeed. So that is, yeah, that will depend on implementation. We need to see exactly how this is organized and how the EU and member states organize this, because of course member states are aware that, you know, they are losing the carbon sink. And so the biomass industry is very concerned actually by this provision. And they're right. Then a fourth element in the outcome of the RED3 is a tightening of the sustainability criteria. This is a bit complicated, but I'll try to be clear and concise. The sustainability criteria are typically, those are three components. And the first one is what is called the sustainable harvesting criteria. So it's a list of practices that member states should be sure to respect when wood is extracted from forest. But actually, because the EU and member states are fighting about forestry policy, in fact, by that I mean that many member states, such as Sweden, do not accept that the EU has authority on forest management. They consider this as a core part of their national sovereignty, and that's very understandable. So the objectives for sustainable harvesting identified by the directive are in fact a legality test. It means that member states must have a national legislation that aims for the same objectives. And in fact, what these sustainable harvesting criteria are testing is legality. You know, essentially, it means that member states, the country that produces the biomass, needs to have a good legal system. A legal system that aims for the same objectives as the directive. But there's a big difference between a test on legality and a test on outcome. A test on outcome would check whether this is actually the case. A test on legality only looks at legislation, not whether this legislation is effective or well implemented. A second aspect of the sustainability criteria is the greenhouse gas savings criteria. So this is a bit tricky because CO2 emissions from wood burning are considered as zero in the energy sector. What is counted here is essentially supply chains emissions, because of course you need to release a lot of CO2 to, you know, harvest the wood, cut it, crush it, transport it to the biomass plants, and all of that emits CO2. And so the idea is that you check, it's a threshold essentially, compared to with a comparator that would be fossil fuels. Biomass plants would need to achieve an 80% energy efficiency by 2030. The idea of the Commission with this was to try to limit the imports of wood from North America, because this is, you know, absolutely disastrous from a climate perspective. I'm not sure this is going to be sufficient. We will see. I will slowly finish on the final outcome of RED3, but that's just so that you have an idea. Something that is very clear in this revision is that member states have regained a lot of discretion in the implementation of the law. What I mean by that is that they have the control of a lot of key definitions in the legislation. And so we might end up in a situation where the legislation is implemented in very different ways, depending on the countries. There is a risk indeed of a grandfathering clause. So, that's a bit complicated and it's a bit of a detail. So I will leave it aside for now. I just want to make an important remark here is that the EU has also adopted a new anti-deforestation legislation this year, last year now. And it's quite meaningful because it means that wood fuels from primary or natural forest that would have been converted to tree plantations, that means that the forest have been degraded. And in that case, the wood from those primary or natural forests can no longer be imported into the EU, in the EU or within the EU. Of course, this legislation applies internally as well. Next slide, please. So this is a reminder because if you read the Renewable Energy Directive revision, you will see that there is quite a case. I mean, there is an attempt to create a market for BECCS, for bioenergy with carbon capture and storage. So this little graph explains essentially the differences between what industry claims BECCS look like. You know, that is, we are only capturing CO2 from the trees and burying it underground. Then the central part of the graph tries to describe what BECCS actually looks like. That is, that you have CO2 emissions all along the supply chain, on the site, and also at the end, because you need to have a guarantee that the CO2 is going to stay in the storage site. And just a simple observation, but that's very important. BECCS is a technology that a lot of people have a lot of hope for, because in theory, it could achieve negative emissions. It means that it could be a device through the trees to capture CO2 from the atmosphere and put it back underground. The problem is that doesn't exist. Yet, I don't know. I know there's a few pilot projects and there's actually a very large project in the EU at the moment that is trying to do that, but so far, not a single project has achieved negative emissions in the world from wood burning for a variety of reasons, because it's not a very efficient process. It's a very energy intensive process. It's a very challenging process also technically. So the problem is that, of course, the promise that this technology might work one day enables the fossil fuel industry in particular to continue to operate, because the promise that this might work one day is the promise that we are going to be able to, you know, clean the mess that we have created in the atmosphere. Unfortunately, this technology, again, is not proven at scale. And so it is very dangerous to, you know, bet our future on a technology that is not functioning. Next slide, please. Sorry, I need to put down the camera. But for the sun, but I couldn't see my screen anymore. Thank you. What about now? I've looked at the evolution of the biomass sector recently. And it's very interesting. You know, 2022 was a very, very special year because of the war in Ukraine and the crisis in the energy sector that this created. And we see that for the first time, industrial demand for wood pellets went down because the economics of the sector had become wrong. And I mean, there's also, you have issues with contract for difference, which is a special way by which energy operators are rewarded. To cut a long story short, the prices of wood have exploded so much that it became more interesting for energy operators to sell back the wood pellet stocks on the market than to produce electricity with them. And we see that this is likely to continue this year in 23. So for the first time ever, the amount of electricity out of wood burning has gone down in Europe. On the other hand, the residential sector has continued to grow. Now we are moving to the implementation phase of the RED III. Keep in mind what I told you, like, member states have a lot of margin of maneuver to implement this legislation. And actually, they have a lot of freedom too. Like, if they want, they can stop all incentives to woody biomass. They have the freedom to do so. And we will actually push them for that. It's a matter of emergency. We are in a climate and biodiversity crisis. We cannot continue to let this policy develop. I mentioned that already, but I will repeat it. It is important. The current collapse of the carbon sink in Europe due to the over extraction of wood from forests, as well as climate change, means that it is not sure that biomass will continue to remain considered as a renewable source. We'll see. Another thing that is very clear, looking at the crisis that we just went through, is that, you know, wood pellets are a game changer in the industry because they are a more concentrated form of energy. And so their market has become global, which is not necessarily the case of logs, for example, that are very heavy, you know. And so we see that, you know, there was a ban in the EU because of the war. And so the EU banned wood pellets and wood imports in general, actually, from Russia and Ukraine and Belarus. But so what we see is that, well, some of these Russian pellets still arrived in the EU through Turkey or Kyrgyzstan, or, you know, just circumventing the ban. But a lot of it went the other way, to East Asia and to South Korea in particular. What we see also is that that's the bioeconomy agenda, is like, globally, more and more industrial sectors are betting on wood as a substitution of raw material for fossil fuels. That's and, you know, for example, at the moment in the EU, we are fighting another legislation, which is the legislation on packaging. The idea is that we want to get rid of single-use packaging. A lot of that is based on plastic, which is extremely polluting. But now we see that the paper lobby wants to promote paper as a replacement. But if we destroy forests for paper, that's not, you know, a desirable outcome either. And when you see, and you have a number of studies now that are looking at all the projected demand for wood for all the industrial sectors, you know, you can talk about the pulp and paper industry, construction industry, the furniture industry. Those are traditional sectors, but you have to see that many new sectors are coming in. For example, the chemical sector, because, yeah, wood, chemically, wood is not very, very different from fossil fuels. And so you can also recycle wood to use as a lot of, as a raw material for many processes there. And so this, the central slide here is extract very interesting study by the WWF Germany, done by the University of Kassel. This study is called Everything from Wood. And you see on the left, this is the current supply in yellow and green. It's the current supply. What is green is what actually should be considered sustainable, according to the authors. So by that, you can see that we are already extracting more wood from forest than what is sustainable at the global level. And on the right, you can see that in dark blue, this is the existing consumption level. So you can see that we are already extracting, you know, too much. And in light blue above, this is the projected theoretical global consumption if everyone in the world consumed wood at the current rate of Germany, for example. And you really have to hope that this never happens, because there isn't enough wood on the planet to do that by very far. You might have seen that, but there was a very important study published in the, I think it was in Science or Nature, one of the two big scientific journals before the summer this year, that there is a 66% probability that the plus 1.5 degrees threshold will be reached by 27. That represents about 400 million humans pushed out of the human climate niche. That means that 400 million humans might have to leave the place where they live today because that place has become inhabitable. So we don't have a lot of time, actually, and we can't afford the luxury to keep such crazy policies in operation much longer. I wanted to finish by asking you at least a question on Japan. Mrs. Katsubara has already talked about this, but Japan today has become the fastest growing market in the world for woody biomass, according to industry sources. It's very sad to see Japan going the same route that Europe went. And I will just finish by sharing my personal opinion that I really hope that more and more decision makers in Europe and Japan and other countries realize that wood indeed is a scarce resource, is a precious resource, that forests are actually our best allies in the climate and biodiversity crisis, and that giving, you know, our money, taxpayers' money, to energy companies to burn forests instead of keeping them and keeping the wood for material uses, or to defend or increase and restore the resilience of forests. I mean, this sort of policy destroys value and undermines our future. A biomass industry in expansion is making our future worse and more dangerous, not better, by burning forests in the name of renewable energy. I will stop here. Thank you very much for your attention.